They want to shout, they want to talk out loud what they experienced, what they went through, what their escape was like.
The effects of conflict from safety to diplomacy to fuel. It's Wednesday, March 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, neighbors help Ukraine. New Zealand unveils sanctions. The United Nations weighs in. Enjoying Chinese food in Africa. It's all on today's VOA Asia. World leaders are feverishly trying to extinguish the raging conflict in Ukraine as warring delegations meet for another round of talks and diplomats rush between capitals to try to talk their way to peace. But in Washington, all eyes are on the gas pump as Russian sanctions send prices to near record highs, and the Biden administration tries to balance American needs with world peace. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Grim scenes as Russian troops continue their siege of Ukraine and diplomats scramble in global capitals to stop this conflict. But at home, President Joe Biden is facing tough questions about how the stringent sanctions against Russia are affecting Americans. Gas prices have hit a near record $4 per gallon across the U.S., and Biden is under pressure from across the political spectrum to do something. Though there is no consensus on what he should do, and he hasn't decided, the White House said.
Well, no decision has been made at this point by the president about a ban on importing oil from Russia. And those discussions are ongoing internally and also with our counterparts and partners in Europe and around the world.
Ukraine's president on Monday called on Biden to make that move.
Boycott.
Sanctions should include a boycott of Russian exports, in particular, a refusal of oil and oil products from Russia. It can be called an embargo or just a moral issue when you refuse to give money to terrorists. A boycott of imports to Russia, if they don't want to respect civilized rules, they shouldn't get goods and services from civilization.
In recent weeks, the White House has quietly made the rounds to oil producers the U.S. usually keeps at arm's length, including Russia-friendly Venezuela, to discuss alternative sources of oil. White House officials have also met with Saudi and Iranian officials, and those discussions hinge on much more than oil, Saki said.
The most important reason why we are focused and have been focused on having these discussions with the Iranians and our P5 plus one partners is to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. That is why we're in these negotiations. We are getting closer. There are still important components to work through, but certainly the discussion of oil is a part of that, but the most important reason is to prevent them from acquiring a nuclear weapon.
Meanwhile, along the Ukrainian-Belarusian border Monday, Russian and Ukrainian delegations met for a third round of talks that both sides said made little progress.
I'm telling you honestly that our expectations from the talks have failed, but we hope that we'll be able to make a more significant step forward next time. The talks will continue.
But in this uncertain time, one thing is unwavering. Ukrainians' resolve. Champion heavyweight boxer turned Kiev mayor Vitaly Klitschko is among those holding the line outside the capital against a Russian advance.
Every house, every street, every checkpoint, we will fight to the death if necessary. No one wants to die, but if necessary, we will protect, most of all, our children, our families.
Harsh words as this conflict stares down a third week, while the world watches. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
The conflict in Ukraine and its effects are very fluid. Keep up with everything that's happening by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia, Facebook at VOA Asia, and our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. New Zealand plans historic sanctions on Russia over Ukraine invasion. South Korea fires warning shots at North Korean vessel that crossed border. South Korea holds election of the unfavorables. Philippine leader approves bill raising sex consent age from 12 to 16. Sanctioning Russia curtails North Korea's hard currency intake. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more by joining us online at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. More than 1.5 million people have fled Ukraine to neighboring countries since the Russian invasion, and that makes it Europe's fastest-growing refugee crisis since World War II. Henry Ridgewell reports from the town of Siemuszul on the Polish-Ukraine border.
A surreal soundtrack greets the sea of humanity fleeing Ukraine, a pianist with a message of peace. A momentary distraction from the misery unleashed by Russia's invasion. More than 1 million Ukrainians have fled to Poland since the invasion, by far the highest of any country. And they have been largely embraced by their European neighbours. Most new arrivals are bused to reception centres away from the frontier. Some have family or friends in Poland where they can stay, but many have nowhere to go. They are given beds in shelters like this one, a school in the nearby town of Siemuszul, now entirely given over to refugees.
It is remarkable how efficiently Poland has managed to absorb the huge number of refugees arriving over its borders so far. The question is how long that can continue as tens of thousands of refugees continue to arrive every day.
Yevgenia has just arrived here with 3 of her 4 children.
My husband is in Ukraine. They didn't let him leave. And also my older son. He's 18. He also had to sign up. So we're separated. Volunteers come to us and offer us opportunities where we can go, where there is work. We want to work, so we're not dependent on someone else, so we can be useful for something.
The school's head teacher, Malgorzata Zioba, oversees the shelter and now has hundreds of refugees under her care.
The worst moments are when, for example, a minibus arrives at night and we take in babies that are 4 or 5 months old. It's really very emotional, and I think not everybody is suited to cope with that. We could do it because we're strong. We don't know for how long. As long as we have the strength, we will help.
Next door, a cultural center has been transformed into a temporary shelter. They have been overwhelmed with donations from local residents and businesses.
At first, they are shocked. They want to shout, they want to talk out loud what they experienced, what they went through, what their escape was like. And then slowly they calm down and get used to the new reality that they have to go on living.
The historical bonds run deep across this border. At the Cathedral of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church in Siemuszul, a prayer service was held Sunday morning for the people of Ukraine. The service was broadcast live across Poland. Many Ukrainian refugees say they hope to return home within weeks, that this dizzying upheaval will soon be over. But as they see the images of death and destruction in the land they left behind, that hope is draining away. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Siemuszul, Poland.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, an unusual step taken by New Zealand. Happening now in Asia, more than 100 hungry and weak Rohingya Muslims arrived on a beach in Indonesia's northernmost province of Aceh after weeks at sea. The villagers, who saw the 114 ethnic Rohingya on a rickety wooden boat, helped them to land and then reported their arrival to authorities. They were given shelter and received help from villagers, police, and military. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for taking time out of your day to spend some with us at VOA Asia. A groundbreaking law enabling New Zealand to freeze the assets of those associated with Russia is expected to pass this week. The new Russia sanctions bill, in response to its invasion of Ukraine, would allow authorities to target individuals, services, companies, and assets. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New legislation would allow New Zealand to impose sanctions on an individual country for the first time. The South Pacific nation can now implement sanctions only when the United Nations Security Council has imposed them. Russia's veto in the council, however, has prevented that from happening. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said her government's unilateral penalties, prompted by the invasion of Ukraine, would freeze Russian assets in New Zealand and stop superyachts, ships and aircraft owned by targeted individuals from entering the country's waters or airspace. The measures would extend to Russian oligarchs and countries that support Russia, including Belarus. The government in Wellington has also released a list banning 100 individuals from travelling to New Zealand. Ardern said Monday the new laws would strike a financial and political blow on Russia.
It will target those of economic or strategic relevance to Russia, including oligarchs. The sanctions will freeze assets located in New Zealand. It will also prevent those who are sanctioned from moving assets to New Zealand or using our financial system as a backdoor to get around sanctions increasingly imposed by other countries.
New Zealand's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nania Mahuta, said Tuesday that international sanctions placed on Russia would act as a wall of resistance and send a message to Moscow that the invasion of Ukraine was wrong. The Australian government said it would be introducing more punitive action on Russia's propagandists and purveyors of disinformation. Its Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said Tuesday that financial sanctions would target members of the Russian military who were responsible for implementing naval ground and airstrikes on Ukraine. Payne said the Canberra government was also working with Facebook, Google and Twitter to take action to suspend the dissemination of content generated by Russian state media within Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a country long known as the breadbasket of Europe because of the prodigious amounts of wheat, corn, and other cereal grains it produces, is extending far beyond Europe to include Asia. Experts from aid agencies say the conflict is wreaking havoc on global food supplies. Ukraine produces 16% of the world's corn, and Ukraine and Russia combined produce 29% of the wheat sold on world markets. Much of what they export goes to South Asia, along with customers in Africa and the Middle East. Virtually no cargo is moving out of either country's Black Sea ports. Still unknown is whether an enduring war in Ukraine will damage this year's harvest or prevent the sowing of crops for the next growing season. Globally, food prices were already at a 10-year high before Russia invaded Ukraine, according to the United Nations World Food Program. Since February 25th, the day after Russia launched its full-scale invasion, wheat futures have risen by as much as 40% and corn futures by as much as 16%. You can read and see more on this story by joining us online at VOA Asia Facebook.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistan has dismissed suggestions it is taking a neutral stance in the Russia-Ukraine conflict or that it is straining Islamabad's relationship with the United States and the West at large. Pakistan has argued it needs to step back from global bloc politics to improve ties with all countries. You'll find all the stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. There's much more ahead on VOA Asia. Right now, the United Nations and international aid agencies are calling for a peaceful end to hostilities in Ukraine as the number of civilian casualties grows and more people flee in terror to safety in neighboring countries. The latest UN figures put the number of civilian casualties at 1,335, including 474 people killed and 861 injured. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN and international aid agencies are calling for a peaceful end to hostilities in Ukraine as the number of civilian casualties grows and more people flee in terror to safety in neighboring countries. The latest UN figures put the number of civilian casualties at more than 1,200, including 406 people killed. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. Text in 321. The UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, which compiles the figures, believes the true number of casualties is much higher than what is recorded. That has led UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet to reiterate her call for a quick, peaceful end to the conflict, which she says has triggered a humanitarian crisis. Her spokeswoman, Liz Throssell, says it is not possible to verify cases of civilian deaths and injuries in many parts of Ukraine because of ongoing hostilities. She says most of the casualties are from airstrikes and explosive weapons used by Russian forces. She says heavy artillery and multiple rocket systems used in many cities have damaged and destroyed hundreds of residential buildings.
We are alarmed by numerous reports of threats and actual harm against journalists. We are also concerned by reports of armed detention of perceived pro-Ukrainian people in areas that have recently come under the control of armed groups in the east, and by reports of violence against those considered to be pro-Russian in Ukrainian government-controlled territories.
The UN Refugee Agency says more than 2 million people have fled Ukraine to neighboring Poland, Moldova, Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, and other European countries. However, UN Watson, spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, says hundreds of thousands of people trapped in the port city of Mariupol are unable to escape.
We stand ready to act in terms of our neutral intermediary role to facilitate the safe passage of civilians out of the city. But the bottom line today is that this situation is really apocalyptic for people. It is getting worse. They are running out of essential supplies. And so our call today is really for life-saving aid to reach these people.
A Russian proposal to create humanitarian corridors to allow people to safely leave Mariupol failed after a ceasefire agreement was not honored. Aid agencies say priority needs include emergency shelter, health care, food, water and sanitation, and psychosocial support to deal with what they call an epidemic of trauma and grief. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, marches took place all over the world Tuesday in recognition of International Women's Day, with the plight of women fleeing Ukraine especially recognized throughout Europe. Women were also recognized throughout Asia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Afghanistan's financial crisis and empowering healthcare workers in Hong Kong are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
Afghanistan has been plunged into financial crisis following the Taliban takeover 6 months ago, worsening an already dire humanitarian situation after decades of war. The foreign aid which once propped up the country has been slow to return, with the hardline Islamists also cut off from Afghan assets held abroad. The trickle-down effect has particularly hurt Afghans like 32-year-old Nuruddin, who quit his factory job when his salary was slashed to 3,000 Afghanis, which is about $30, soon after the Taliban's return, mistakenly believing he would find something better. But with hundreds of thousands of unemployed across the country, nothing else was available. In desperation, he sold a kidney as a short-term fix. Herat resident Nuruddin.
I was not happy and was tense that day. I went under the knife to cut a part of my body. I didn't want to go, but I didn't have any other option. I did it for my children.
Nuruddin was among 8 people AFP spoke to who had sold a kidney to feed their families or pay off debt, some for as little as $1,500. It is illegal to sell or buy organs in most developed nations, where donors are usually related to the recipient, or are people acting out of altruism. In Afghanistan, however, the practice is unregulated. Hong Kong's government invoked emergency powers to allow doctors, nurses, and other personnel from the Chinese mainland to help combat a spiraling coronavirus outbreak. The densely populated metropolis is in the throes of its worst ever COVID wave, registering thousands of cases every day, overwhelming hospitals and government efforts to isolate all infected people in dedicated units. Hong Kong authorities have followed a zero COVID strategy similar to mainland China that kept infections mostly at bay throughout the pandemic. But they were caught flat-footed when the highly infectious Omicron variant broke through those defenses and have since increasingly called on the Chinese mainland for help. Hong Kong is now facing a very dire epidemic situation, which continues to deteriorate rapidly, the government said in its statement announcing the use of emergency powers. Hong Kong has recorded more than 62,000 COVID cases in the current wave, compared with just 12,000 during the 2 years before. Local modeling predicts the city might see as many as 180,000 infections and 100 deaths daily by mid-March. Local authorities have increasingly resorted to emergency orders in recent years. City leader Carrie Lam has defended her approach, citing the intensity of the virus crisis. In an environment as urgent as this, we cannot let existing laws stop us from doing what we should do, she said. This is not the mentality for fighting a war. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Even though there has been a wave of immigrants from China to Africa in recent years, some families made that journey generations ago. VOA's Kang Cheng Chen has more from Nairobi about a Chinese Kenyan and his restaurant.
From popcorn chicken to beef chow fung, this restaurant has been offering famous street foods from Hong Kong since it opened in 2020. But the Cantonese eatery called Dragon Eye is located in Nairobi.
We do a lot of like a char siu bao, which is very popular in Hong Kong. We do the typhoon shelter crab, typhoon shelter prawns.
There are also coastal Swahili-style kebabs that cannot be found anywhere else in Nairobi. Owner Henry Tin was born and raised in Mombasa. He speaks English, Kiswahili, Cantonese, and a bit of Mandarin. His father, originally from Hong Kong, arrived in Kenya by ship during World War II to escape the Japanese occupation of China. Tin worked as a maritime engineer for 18 years. An economic downturn caused his family to move to Nairobi and pivot to the restaurant industry.
My mother was a good cook, so we cooked Chinese food. But I ate together with my house help and my neighbors. They were all Africans.
Of course.
So I was used to ugali and the local food.
Yeah.
And of course, Mombasa used to climb the trees, get mangoes and baobab and all those things. Yeah.
Tin's mother initially taught the staff at their first restaurant. Then his wife, a Hong Kong native and trained chef, stepped in.
My mother passed away nearly about 15 years ago. So my wife took over.
In recent years, a new wave of migrants from China has arrived in Kenya to work on infrastructure projects linked to China's Belt and Road Initiative. Some Kenyans are wary of China's growing presence and find it difficult to overcome the language and culture differences. But for Tin, who was born and raised in Kenya, he says he feels wholly accepted by Kenyans, both as a citizen and within society.
But of past, I would say, 40 years, the Kenyans have learned to, knowing the world and the Chinese, because, you know, China did a lot of investment here. Yeah, in the beginning, they don't know much about China. Now they know a lot about China. And the Kenyan people are very friendly, especially Mombasa, Nairobi. I can walk about, integrate with them, talk in Swahili.
There is also a small community of people from Hong Kong living in Nairobi. Others emigrated in search of a different life and business opportunities, such as restaurants that cater to growing Chinese populations across East Africa.
Number one, they bring the culture here. A lot of Chinese also got married to the local people. They are doing farming in Kenya.
Tin says it's easier now to get more ingredients and vegetables like bok choy for his restaurant. He's hoping a growing Chinese presence in Kenya will mean more business for him. For VOA News, Kang Jing Chang, Nairobi.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. You know where to find us. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And of course, there's our website, voanews.com. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.